All right, here's Jared Greenberg from NBA TV. The NBA playoffs continuing. It was kind of a shocking outcome last night. I mean, Golden State has been steamrolling everyone. They got smoked last night. Again, here's Jared Greenberg from NBA TV. How shocked were you with that outcome last night, Jared?
Well, I wasn't shocked that Houston would be able to come back and win. I was shocked that they absolutely blew out Golden State. You know, I thought they had kind of started to find their rhythm and didn't even play all that well, relatively to their own standards in game one, but yet won by a convincing margin. So I figured if Houston was going to get back and even up the series as they did, it would be by a much closer margin than it was.
How, I wouldn't say injured, but how out of shape does Steph Curry look to you?
You know, I think it's a big question. You know, is he still suffering effects from the injury? Is he still, as you you know, implied, is he suffering the effects of still trying to get in shape from being out for so long? Or is he just in a slump? And I don't think we know. They're certainly not going to make excuses for him. They kind of joked about it after the game last night. But I would say it's certainly not helping the fact that Houston finally made a really conscious effort last night to go at him. And while I think, you know, Steph Curry is not as bad of a defender as many people would like to make him out to be, because it's easy just to pin him as that. He's certainly the weakest of the five that are on the court, usually for Golden State, but that doesn't mean he's awful. But when you make maybe the most important offensive player on a team work defensively, it maybe takes a little bit away from him. And I think we saw, you know, 23 times last night the Rockets, you know, went out of their way to go at Steph Curry. And that certainly can't be helping the shooting slump he's in.
There's some question marks with Golden State, like what was that performance last night? But don't you see this going back there and then just they become the Golden State Warriors again and everybody's on fire and they win a couple games and they make quick work of this series? Or do you not see it playing out like that?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly still think Golden State wins. I don't change, you know, how I feel about this series after a night like last night, especially after we had, you know, the exact opposite happen on game one. You know, the scary part was game one, as I mentioned, Golden State, I didn't think played their best game. And Houston really didn't play a bad game. Like, James Harden had, what, 40 points. And the turnover numbers, while for the team at 16 in game one were a little higher than they'd like them to be, Harden and Chris Paul combined for five the whole game. You know, and it's amazing to think that Houston played that well, and we didn't think Golden State played all that perfect in game one, and Golden State won by a large margin. Then last night, it's pretty clear, Houston was on their game. They were great, but Golden State played really bad. Do you think you're going to get, you know, three more instances of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green not playing all that well? The thing with Golden State is that they need two of those guys to play great, and usually two out of the four do. Last night, only one out of four did. And I have a hard time believing that repeats itself three more times.
With Jared Greenberg of NBA TV. Game three tomorrow night in Cleveland. Celtics up 2-0. And two pretty decisive wins. I mean, a couple of beatdowns. And the Celtics, you know, I've been so impressed with them all year. Brad Stevens gets so much love. But I think it's Danny Ainge who's truly the superstar of that organization. Yeah. When you consider what he's done. How much trouble do you think LeBron is in? Do you believe he can find a way to dig them out of this? Or is this over for you?
Well, do I answer from LeBron or from what everybody else thinks? Because LeBron never thinks LeBron's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta
yeah,
know
that's
that.
True.
Yeah.
And listen, I mean, I'll be very critical of LeBron at times, but, you know, I think right now he's the third greatest player that's ever played the game and, you know, still has a really good chance of being probably the most accomplished and the best player we've ever seen. So I say it in jest, but when he's on the court and he's playing the way he is, I wouldn't count anything to be over. You know, I don't think the rest of his team is prepared and capable of doing this, but he's LeBron freaking James, guys. And he's, you know, shown, you know, I don't mean to rub it in, but he's shown Raptor fans, he's shown basketball fans in Canada, you know, how he could turn it on and just take over a possession, a quarter, a game, a series, in the snap of a finger. And I don't think he's getting tired, you know, which is the scary part.
No, I don't think he is either, but he had a triple-double in game two, and they lost by double digits. So I don't think, right. You know, someone else has to step up at some point.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, and it's to me, it's a bit silly at this point that it seems like the Cavs are still searching for guys. Like, you play Rodney Hood one night, and you sit Jordan Clarkson the next night. I mean, you know, it's one thing for, like, the way the Raptors played it, where everybody plays every night, and you know that's how it's going to be. You just don't know the minutes and certainly the pattern. But a team like the Cavs, you know, you can't be the sixth man one night and not play the next. I mean, it's we're closing in on 100 games for the season. You got to kind of know who you are and know how you're going to win. And right now, the only thing the Cavs have done all season long is just say, all right, LeBron, go do it. And he does it time in, time again. And that's why, you know, that's why I don't count him out, because they have no business beating the Raptors. In my mind, they had no business beating the Pacers with the way the supporting cast played. But LeBron, somehow, some way, is still in it. And if he wins game three, let alone if he wins game three and four, we're having a whole other conversation.
Yeah, not only did they beat the Raps, as you know, I mean, they embarrassed the Raptors and they swept them. Mm-hmm. And as a result, Dwayne Casey lost his gig. And
can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
I made a prediction before the Eastern Conference Finals that the worst thing that could happen for the Raptors is the Celtics beating the Cavs, or at least just making it a really long, interesting series. Like that to me, if you're a Raptors fan, this is the one time you're rooting for the Cavs, because you just want people to, all right, see, it's LeBron.
Absolutely. Yeah, no question. I mean, right. that was hanging over them. After they lost game one, it was like, wait a minute, did you see the Pacers push these guys?
Yeah.
I mean, the Pacers pushed them to seven, and they blew them out a couple of times.
So you can imagine the reaction after the 0-2 deficit.
Right.
Now.
And then when they got swept, and then you look at the Celtics, and you're like, okay, well, LeBron's humming now. Kevin Love came alive.
Yep.
Korver and Smith are starting to hit shots. Tristan Thompson's kind of found his game. And no
Kyrie.
That guy
who started the year as the third string point guard goes and beats you.
Exactly. So, yes, right. it looks awful. The fact that the Celtics have two, it looks awful. If they actually win the series, especially in like a sweep or five or six, it'll look terrible. And I think that's probably why Masai reacted the way he did. But in terms of the coaching situation, Mike Budenholzer agreed to terms in Milwaukee, and there were reports that Masai was showing interest in him. What do you make of this story, if it's true that he picked Milwaukee over Toronto?
All right, so a couple of different angles here, if you guys can give me a moment. The first is the more obvious, probably what you guys have hit on. And this is anybody who I've spoken to over, you know, essentially the last, 6 months since we known that Milwaukee's going to have a coaching opening. Anybody who is going to be able to go get a coaching job, who they didn't currently have a job, wanted that job. And the reason why is because of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Listen, in the NBA, market size, organizational history, organizational chaos, all that stuff kind of goes out the door when you're talking to coaches who have the ability to coach a guy who many feel at one point in his career might be the best player in the game. Will it happen? I don't know. But like, that's the ceiling on Giannis. So that's where it starts. So that's where you can't take the insult, because you didn't have that guy and they did. So that's the edge. But the second part of it is this, and I think it's more interesting, and I don't know any of this to be true. I just kind of surmising it. Remember, Mike Budenholzer had a big part in personnel when he came over from the Spurs with Danny Ferry. Then Danny Ferry had his incident, got let go by the team, and Budenholzer right away, less than a year onto the job or so, is named president of the basketball operations. Right, he got that stripped away from him this past year. He was not happy being told by management and ownership to lose. That was never part of the plan for Budenholzer. He's a guy who wins every game. So he leaves the Hawks, and he's got a position where Toronto's open and Milwaukee's open. Milwaukee just hired a guy as their GM who most people in the NBA didn't even know his name prior to him, John Horst, being named. He's a very young guy, very inexperienced, good at his job, good guy. But in Toronto, you've got, like, Fort Knox on what management's going to look like for a very long time. And if you've got a very good, you know, Bobby Webster's a star, a rising star in the NBA and among executives as your GM. And if you've got Masai Ujiri, who was recruited by the organization to come from Denver. So if Budenholzer wants to stay in personnel, who do you think is going to listen to him more? You know, what Masai and Bobby have built in Toronto, or a guy who's been on the job and been in the NBA for less than a decade?
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, if he's one of those guys where, you know, if you want him to cook, you got to let him shop for the ingredients. It's more than likely not going to happen here, as long as Masai sticks around. I mean, Masai has been here for 5 years, and he's starting to feel some heat for the first time in 5 years. I can tell you that, Jared.
Well, I think that's unfortunate. You know, I think it was unfortunate that Masai made the decision to let go Dwayne Casey. I think it's unfortunate that Masai is getting heat because, you know, again, it's great. I love the passion from the standpoint of, all right, we've been toying around with this enough. Let's go contend for championships, right? Like, I love that's the thinking, especially in the NBA so much when, you know, so many teams are trying to lose, trying to get draft picks. So I love that aspect of it. But I also think that there should be some appreciation of, not of the people who have built all of this, but just of the situation you're in. Like, the Raptors have been among the best four teams in the NBA in the Eastern Conference the last, 4 or 5 years. And there's no reason to think you won't be at least there next year if you bring back everything to be exactly the same. And I just think the thing that disappoints me the most about the Dwayne Casey firing is that, in my mind, if you're going to replace the guy who is going to go down as the greatest coach in Raptors history and has led you to places nobody even came close to leading you to, shouldn't you know where you're going next? Like, shouldn't you know what the plan is? And unless there was some sort of, you know, handshake, you know, backroom handshake with Budenholzer and he screwed you, which I doubt happened. I highly doubt that happened. How do you let go of Dwayne Casey, the best thing that's, you know, been in this organization a long time, and not know where you're going? Who's going to come in and get this team to 59 wins in the one seed and with an opportunity to go to the second round of the playoffs for, what, 4 straight years? Who else is going to do that?
We talk about it a lot. It's like you only fire the guy if you have somebody better lined up.
Right, right.
Wow. Well, what is the perception?
There's a lot of great coaches. There's a lot of great people. But it's just the thing is, and somebody's going to do a great job, whoever has this team. But just I don't want people to overlook what Dwayne Casey had this team doing that people 5 years ago never thought would be possible.
Well, and then what's the perception from the outside? Do you believe that the Raptors if they bring back the exact same team, right, will they have the exact same result? Like, is it... Do they have to change that core, whether it's Kyle or DeMar, to give a different look, or maybe to bring in some different players that could challenge a Cleveland? I know everyone just talks about LeBron, but you have to find a different way to circumvent that.
There's no question. I think that there's probably, you know, an A, B, C, D, E, F game plan here, because this is going to be a wild summer in the NBA, guys. And obviously, you know, LeBron controls everything, and then the dominoes will fall from there. And it looks like now the Raptors are in a really tough cap situation. You don't have your first-round pick, and so you're thinking, all right, everybody's just coming back. But I would say be prepared for the unpredictable. And I'm not trying to foreshadow anything in particular, but it's going to be another crazy summer in the NBA, and I think things may be available to the team at some point, and we have no clue what they are yet, but by way of trade. You know, Kyle Lowry making $30 million a year seems like a lot of money, but for 2 years, if you know what you're getting, there may be a team who thinks he's the difference maker, right? He's the one piece that they're missing around other superstars. And I don't know that you've got to get rid of those guys. Maybe there's a way that you some other team is trying to unload a high-priced guy that you can figure out to dump some cap space to. It's not going to be easy, but I would just say don't get down before we get to August.
I'm with you on that. Enjoy the games going forward. And as always, we appreciate you doing this. Thank you, Jared.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
There's Jared Greenberg from NBA TV.